Just about 2 years ago, Microsoft declared its Microsoft 365 Copilot was ready for prime time, or GA. I would argue it actually wasn't quite there yet back in November 2023. Most customers hadn't figured out how to calculate Copilot ROI or lock down their data ahead of Microsoft's push to deploy. But a lot has happened since then with all the various Microsoft Copilots. And Microsoft Global Systems Integrators are playing a key part in rolling them out. So we thought it would be interesting right now to check in with one of Microsoft's biggest partners, PwC, and hear directly about what they've been seeing in the field around Copilot adoption. And that's the subject of today's episode. Welcome to the Directions on Microsoft Briefing Podcast. I'm Mary Jo Foley, the Editor-in-Chief here at Directions. I'm your host for the series of podcasts for those interested in the Microsoft Enterprise IT ecosystem. Joining me today are two guests. James Farhat is a PwC principal that leads its Microsoft Financial Services industry practice, focusing on AI adoption, enterprise strategy, and digital transformation. James joined PwC following the acquisition of his company, Applications Consulting Training Solutions, ACTS. And we've also got Directions analyst Barry Briggs, who covers data governance and writes about various CXO topics here at Directions. Before he joined Directions on Microsoft in 2020, Barry worked at Microsoft for 12 years in a variety of roles, including as Chief Technology Officer for Microsoft's own IT organization for 5 years. Coincidentally, or maybe not, my two guests are not strangers. 7 years ago, James Barry and Eduardo Kastner co-authored a book entitled Designed to Disrupt, Reimagine Your Apps and Transform Your Industry. Welcome, guys. Thank you so much for doing the podcast with me today.
Great to be here.
Mary Jo, thanks for having me.
All right, so there are so many places I would love to dig in on this topic, but I want to start with one of the areas where we at Directions have gotten a lot of questions, which is ROI. We've had our members ask us for recommendations around how they should be thinking about Copilots and ROI. And at a couple of recent industry events that I attended, the Copilot ROI sessions were packed. We know that Microsoft has its own tools for calculating Copilot ROI, but I'm curious, can customers really rely on the company pushing a new technology to tell them how much value they're going to get if they spend $30 per user per month on top of what they're already paying for existing subscriptions? So James, I bet you have some insights here around the tools and the measurements that customers should be tracking when it comes to ROI.
Yes, Mary Jo. Like in the market, things have changed a lot over the last couple of years when Copilot was first introduced. And I think there's been a big catalyst in the last 6 months based on its capability. And some of the challenges in the beginning is how do I drive value out of Copilot? Because some of the maturity of the product, as you've known, and Microsoft products have not always been there when they first come out. And then they mature as customers give feedback and additional capabilities are brought into the product. Mm-hmm. Well, what we've found is that we first start with a motivational model, like why are you using Copilot and what are you using it for? And what's important is to understand and to create a rubric score that's going to show value against that motivational model. Okay. That motivational model could be risk. It could be to drive better operational efficiency. It could be to grow market share. But what's important is to not be aligned just on the vendor's model, because that's just a hypothesis. Mm-hmm. To be able to tune in based on that rubric score that's important to your business against that motivational model. And we're getting more advanced with the additional capabilities that fall on top of Copilot. So as Copilot Studio and M365 Copilot have advanced and started to use the Azure AI ecosystem in the security and governance, it's become real, real important to be able to measure that. Mm-hmm. And to also think about day two run costs. And I think a lot of folks don't think about that. And day two run cost is a cost that you have to have in being able to support agent lifecycle management and agent operations. And so that's what we're seeing right now. And that's continuing to progress very quickly, just as Copilot has. And customers are becoming much more educated on that.
Okay. Barry, got any points to add or questions you'd like to ask here?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I
caution everybody to remember that, as I'm sure they all know, that Microsoft's tools for measuring ROI are generally designed with the idea that they want to show very positive ROI, and, you know, therefore cause you to buy more seats of Copilot. But that having been said, they can be very useful in measuring a lot of things, and that's important. You know, so as you deploy Copilot, knowing how many people are using it, you know, how long they're using it for, who's using it, you know, various, all this, not only quantitative data, but qualitative data as well. Are they finding it useful? You know, thinking about, you know, what, and James said this, and I think it's really important, which is focusing on the use case, you know, so understanding, you know, not just buying it, but buying it for a specific purpose and knowing in advance what use case it is that you're attempting to solve. And lastly, I'd say that, you know, most customers that we talk to find the real value of Copilot happens as you connect it to enterprise data sources. So not standalone, you know, maybe helping you correct, you know, write a grammatically correct email, but connecting it with the data that's in your ERP system or your CRM system or what have you.
Okay.
But there's one last thing I'd say about this, and this is about that $30 per user per month. Remember that everything in Microsoft is negotiable, you know, and you know, when you think about, you know, when you think about that, you know, pretty high price, you know, think about where you put that in terms of your priorities. You know, as you go into your negotiations with Microsoft, you always want to be thinking about your gives and your gets, right? And so, you know, we have a whole practice around helping you get the most for your Microsoft dollar. And just remember that that $30 is not fixed.
Right, right. We've been hearing some discounting, like tales of discounts across the board for various, you know, based on the organization size.
Right.
And
right.
It's definitely happening. So, yeah. Okay, now the next topic I have is something James mentioned when we were talking about doing this podcast that I thought was really interesting. He talked about pilot purgatory. So I'm going to describe that as this kind of limbo state of being stuck between a pilot and a full-blown deployment. When customers decide to move from trial to enterprise-wide Copilot adoption, there have got to be some pain points that they need to be ready for, right? So I'm interested in hearing what customers should be thinking about around governance, especially, which I know is a topic near and dear to Barry's heart. So I'd like to hear both of you talk about this a little bit, like how to get out of pilot purgatory. Who wants to start? James, Barry?
I can start. I mean, okay. I'll say this. I deal with so many different clients, and mainly in financial services, but sometimes I have a couple of other sectors. And I always feel like pilot purgatory is where like experiments outrun their identity and the data hygiene. Mm. And so I'll hear somebody say, well, I've got this value impact and I can save like X amount of money, which ties back to the ROI, and let's just go run a pilot. But what ends up happening is a lot of times they don't think about the things that are day two run, which really align with governance. Mm-hmm. Like thinking about things like data loss prevention and how are you going to deal with security labeling? And how do you basically triage use cases based on value and the feasibility? Because sometimes we think we can do everything and then there's a technical feasibility issue or a person constraint. Because you have to think about some of these things deal with workflows and deal with basically constraints with people working against what their activities are. And this is something dear to Barry's heart because we always talk about workflow and how you transform that within the business. And then how you actually have enablement champions, you know? There's a lot of things that happen past the pilot that gets it out of purgatory and understanding that change management and that adoption. And I think it's a lot more complex than when we rolled out Microsoft Exchange, right?
Right.
Or when we use Excel or Word, because now we're taking people, right? And what their actual roles, responsibilities, and activities are. And we're looking to leverage AI to help replace some of that and or augment that. And so I always believe two like boring, reliable use cases per function is a lot better than 50 or 60 experiments.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good point. Barry, anything to add here?
Yeah. You know, you mentioned two words that that are very near and dear to my heart, data governance. And, you know, I think that we have been talking about data governance since the dawn of time in IT. And we've made progress in that space, but we need to accelerate the progress of data governance. And why? Because ADI can find everything and it can find it really fast. And so that, you know, that little file you had with all that sensitive data that you keep in some SharePoint subfolder that nobody knows about and is hidden from the rest of the world, AI can find it, you know, in a nanosecond. So the first thing I think about is, you know, you have to know what you have. And, you know, that actually tends to be an incredibly challenging problem. You know, I think there are companies now that are pushing petabytes of data, you know, all over the place. They're collecting tons and tons of telemetry from their systems, from their IoT, from their customers, and so on. There's enormous amounts of data. Just knowing what you have, where it lives, what's valuable, what's sensitive, is an incredibly challenging problem. If you can master it, the rewards are phenomenal, because then you can use Copilot to tap into all this data. And as I mentioned before, that's where the ROI happens, is when you have the Copilots and AIs generally being able to reach out to the rest of the enterprise and bring all that data together to help you and accelerate and amplify your activities. So knowing your data is job one. Labeling your data, as James said, job two. Knowing where the data, you know, what data is sensitive and must be protected, protected from exfiltration or exposure or what have you. Critically important, knowing how Copilot is actually being used and what data that Copilot is touching. Critically important, knowing, for example, that, you know, Copilot interactions themselves are logged and tracked, and importantly, are e-discoverable. You know, critically important. So all these different components about data governance really come into play and have a certain amount of urgency when you think about AI and Copilot.
Right. Okay. I am going to take a little pause here. I think this is a good point for that. And I want to talk for a minute about directions on Microsoft's world famous licensing boot camps. So we have a few of these, both virtual and in person, that are coming up over the next few months. Our Microsoft licensing and negotiation boot camps can help people like you understand the rules. You'll learn how Microsoft products are licensed, how to avoid traps, and how to spot opportunities for savings, like we're talking about in this podcast today. Given all of the recent and coming changes from Microsoft around volume licensing and enterprise agreements, it is the perfect time to talk with our licensing experts who have decades of experience. You'll leave the bootcamp with at least one and likely lots more tips that will pay for the LBC course. Our next in-person bootcamp is happening really soon, in Bellevue, Washington, right in Microsoft's backyard. It's September 17th to 19th. Then next year, we'll be in Los Angeles in February and in Washington, D.C. in April 2026. If you'd like to learn more, go to directionsonmicrosoft.com/training. Okay, back to co-piloting lessons from James and Barry. So now we're going to move up the stack a little bit and talk about things like business impact and strategy. So I know, James, you can't name customer names, but I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some examples that you've seen in the field where Copilot helped customers beyond improved efficiency and productivity, which are the things we always hear about when people talk about why you should use Copilot.
Yeah, so what's interesting in financial services, there it's wrought with inefficiencies because of unstructured data. Mm-hmm. So if you think about, like, when you go to a branch at a bank, you have sometimes a legal order for garnishment, or you might have to do a power of attorney. There's a lot of unstructured data that happens at the bank, and the retail bank, commercial bank, or capital markets. And this is an area where there's a lot of manual work that goes back to an operations center, where you can help reduce the friction with using components that exist within the Azure AI ecosystem, and Copilot being that UI for AI that sits in front of the customer. Mm-hmm. And so what I've seen a lot of is banks trying to find areas where there is massive inefficiency in their workflow, mm-hmm. and they fall from all the way to the branch that touches the customer into things like risk and regulatory, where they have to maintain regulatory compliance around risk controls and security assessments and issue management. And Copilot can really help do that and match against current reg changes that are happening today. in the areas of like insurance, you know, if you think about a claim, there's a lot of unstructured data in a claim because insurance is based on states. And so a lot of times you might bring in healthcare data, or you might have real estate data that's unstructured, that's based on a county or based within a state. And so claims adjudication has become a big thing with Copilot, and being able to automatically connect back to an enterprise system that's a claim system. So there's a couple of different examples that come to unstructured, but the other area that I've seen a lot of is how do you actually create more headless activity? Mm-hmm. And me and Barry talked about this a couple months ago, Barry, and you'll remember this, is like, is agentic AI and Copilot going to replace SaaS? And that's a discussion that people talk about. I do believe that there is going to be work that comes off of the screen that a human does, that agentic AI and Copilot and other components are going to be able to do. We call that sort of headless. Like, how do we move to more of a headless framework in front of a legacy system that somebody has? Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing a lot of that come about, to where we can extend things that it's too expensive to do in the legacy system, but we can use the workflow capabilities of Copilot and Azure AI Foundry and some of the other adjacent capabilities to kind of to fill that in.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you, James. And, you know, not just replacing SaaS, but also, you know, it's augmenting or even replacing some of the RPA features in some applications as well. You know, it's all great stuff. And, you know, just one anecdote, just to, you know, to illustrate some of the wide use cases that we're seeing for Copilot. I was chatting with a friend who works in a large data center, and he said that one of the things they're finding is that Copilot was very useful for just deciphering the sometimes cryptic error messages that they get from hardware in the data center. And they actually found that, you know, it dramatically accelerated the SRE process for finding root causes of problems in the data center. So I thought that was a pretty cool use case.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. All right. Speaking of approaches, I always ask people this question in podcasts because I'm curious if there's something like a checklist or a set of approaches that are something everybody can use when it comes to aligning Copilot with things like organizational goals, securing stakeholder buy-in, and driving adoption. In other words, are there certain things that successful Copilot implementers do and anything they should not or do not do?
I actually think that, you know, if you go back to adoption and change management, which has always been a discussion around moving out productivity tools into the market, and this has been going on for a long time, I think that there needs to be a bottoms-up education about what the possible is at the same time of aligning leadership and buying into this. I think some of the areas that I've noticed is that they really don't know what they can or cannot do. Mm-hmm. And with the changes happening so fast, and like I was just with a bank recently, and there was like 200 people in the IT department, and I got to present to them Copilot and some of the things from a very contextual workflow capability of what can you do to make changes. And they were blown away by some of the things I showed them with Researcher and Microsoft Analyst and mm-hmm. some of the things you could do with AI Foundry. And they had no idea how quick they could drive some impact. So I think one of the things is from the bottom up, educating them of what's possible mm-hmm. can help align with that top down of laying out what those organizational goals are that are matched to the motivational model of how people are basically incentivized within the organization. So some organizations are, we've got to basically add more earnings per share. That means we're going to be cutting costs. Some of it's grow market share. Everybody wants to do both all the time. But depending on where that motivational model sits, and then I think making sure that people below are communicating with people above about what that really is, because I think there's more impact if the people doing the work mm-hmm. will help secure that stakeholder buy-in mm-hmm. and make sure that the myths of AI are, because I think there's a huge myth of AI, and this isn't really about AI, this is about business model reinvention and business process reinvention. Right. I think those things can help drive adoption. And I think those things need to happen and to be more programmatic and more intentional. And I don't see that necessarily just yet. They're not as structured yet. There's a lot of pilot purgatory going on. There's a lot of, you know, the word AI continually being used and really thinking about why are we doing it? What and how are we going to do it? And I think kind of sitting back and sobering the moment a little bit, I think is something that needs to happen in the market. And I think that's what's going to drive Copilot implementers to be much more effective and scale a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. In fact, that was really well said, James. You know, I think educating people in the art of the possible is incredibly important, because there's just, you know, this mass amount of, I'd say, noise about what AI can do, you know, what the quote unquote dangers might be, blah, blah, blah. And sort of understanding, you know, I've seen a lot of people's mouths drop open when they see analyst or researcher inside of Copilot, and some of the possibilities that Copilot can do. We did, you know, company I worked with did a competitive analysis in Copilot analyst, and the report that it generated knocked their socks off. So there's, you know, the art of the possible. That having been said, the other piece of this, which I think is critically important, is we talked a little bit about this before, is the governance aspect of this. And, you know, I just reemphasize that, you know, Copilot interactions themselves, for example, are e-discoverable. And so you need to put in place the appropriate controls to track what is it people are actually saying to Copilot, because people being people, there's sometimes harmful content or harassment, or, you know, even things like insider training sorts of things that, you know, like, you know, some C-level person is asking, is this the right time to trade my stock? You know, don't do that, you know. And, yeah. and that's where purview, I think, comes into, you know, is important for just to keep an eye on what people are using it for. And, you know, and I just emphasize too that, you know, as you look at this, that capability does not come for free. You have to have the E5 level of purview to get those kind of features. But, you know, as much as that sounds like Big Brother, it's pretty important.
Right. Okay, I've got a last question that's kind of a big question, and we've talked about the word agents a couple times during the show, but that's the new hot buzzword, right? Agents. So I'm curious how both of you see Copilot evolving in regards to agents. I'm assuming there's more to this than just saying, okay, now we're not going to talk about Copilot, we're going to start talking about agents. But what is actually happening in terms of where agents fit in with Copilots and things that enterprises should know when they're talking about agents and Copilots together?
Mary Jo, this is so dear to my heart right now. I've actually been writing a lot about agent lifecycle management and how the market's looking at it and agent operations. And I think, like, when Barry was talking about governance and data governance and day two run, I think there's a big difference in a growth of understanding between what we had as UI for AI with Copilot Studio that has agents, right? But they're no code and very easy to do, or M365 Copilot. And then opening up the aperture to, like, using AI Foundry and AI agent service and Azure context understanding, or leveraging different models and allow model context switching automatically. And we're getting into leveraging, you know, LRMs, you know, logical reasoning models. And now what just came out was hierarchical reasoning models. So it's balancing the capabilities that we have today and what is that governance going to need us to do to grow. Because today in an organization without any digital agents, you still have a tremendous amount of governance in managing people.
Right.
And now you're going to put more of a burden on people to figure out what does it mean to leave pilot purgatory to go to production with multi-agent workflows that have all kinds of different agents. You have computer user assisted agents, you have autonomous agents. And now how do you think about that? Because the human still exists.
Right.
You still have to have human in the loop. How do you figure out between that human and the digital agent how work gets passed? And just like a person retires, an agent might retire. An agent might need to get upskilled because data changes. Mm-hmm. The features and capabilities might change because of an acquisition, because businesses are not static. They continue to change. So I think all of the CSPs, all of the, you know, providers that are providing all of these orchestration services and AI, you know, workflow systems, I think are still trying to figure that out.
Right.
I think we're probably there on a case-by-case basis, but at scale, we're still maturing. And I think we got to back up from the technology a little bit and think about how that works with people. And sometimes we lose that. We just keep building these technical capabilities but we don't think about when we run day two run and we have to think about security and the ever changing part of a business, how do we evolve that in the cycle?
Right.
And I think we're moving faster than I've ever seen. I'm just not sure that organizations have been able to scale that in their understanding just yet. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a huge opportunity for PwC and I think other providers in the market to be able to drive that understanding and to figure that out. And the difference between what we traditionally did in moving something to the cloud or migrating a mailbox is now you're really dealing with situational fluency. And that means what is the actual business process? Mm-hmm. What's the role, responsibility, and activity within that process? And how am I going to transform some of that work, those tasks, and plan them out, take them on off of a human person to a digital agent?
Right.
And I think in contact centers and operations, that's a little bit easier. And I think that's where you're seeing the larger impact in other sectors. I think as it starts to move to more complex line of business where things aren't repetitive, it's going to become even more complex. Mm-hmm. But I think we're in early days still. And I've seen a lot of case studies here and there, but I haven't seen scale.
Right. I know Microsoft's talked about this frontier firm concept where they're trying to get people to start thinking about the things you're talking about here. But I think very early days, and it's going to take a lot of kind of reiterating of that message before people start understanding the significance.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, there's a huge prerequisite to all of this. We've talked about that a lot in this show, which is getting your data house in order. You know, and that really is critically important to everything we've been talking about. You know, and you know, before I go on, let me just say, if you haven't read James's series, it's on LinkedIn, on the agent lifecycle, you really must. You know, why? Because, you know, as I've been discussing, you know, agents are really part of the stack that Microsoft is evangelizing. You know, I've heard Satya talk about this time and again. You know, there's a new stack for applications emerging, and it is copilots of the UI, agents of the business logic, and underneath that is Fabric or Snowflake or Databricks or what have you. This massive amount of well-curated data that the agents can consume. You know, and the hype around agents, you know, is really incredible, which means there's not a whole lot of clarity about what exactly they are, what they can do, and so forth. And, you know, I agree with James, it's early days. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll just add one more anecdote about this. You know, a lot of the use cases that I see for agents are really just reinventions of microservices. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, remember 5 years ago? I mean, everything was all about microservices, right? Make your e-commerce application, it's monolithic, and you split it up into little pieces. There's the catalog microservice and the transaction microservice and reverse logistics microservice. So when each microservice can be independently developed by different teams as long as they all, you know, keep to the Swagger API contract, blah, 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 and so forth. And it's really dynamic. It enables enormous agility and so forth. And then you realize that after a time, as great as that was, you were really splintering your data. You couldn't manage all the hundreds of microservices that were all over the cloud. You had one team in Cosmos, another team in SQL Server, another team in Postgres. Every, you know, data models involved independently. You know, you made a huge problem for the analytics people, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, while I completely buy into the notion that agents give us a lot more capability and a lot more power, and in fact, you know, we need to learn, as James says, we need to learn to manage them some ways analogously to the way we manage people over time. Mm-hmm. You know, they're infinitely customizable because, you know, anybody can quote unquote program them because you're just giving them prompts as to what to do. And you know, and so, you know, that leaves you the possibility of building an application which is completely customized to your company's business model. But remember, you know, it's a double or triple or quadruple or however many edge sword.
Indeed. All right. On that note, I would like to say thank you to both of you. There were some really good real world perspectives presented here, which I loved. So thanks.
Thank you so much, Mary Jo.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Mary Jo. I was on mute there for a second.
No worries. All right. So I want to remind our listeners they can find lots more coverage of all things Microsoft related on directionsonmicrosoft.com. Thank you so much again for listening. If you have questions, comments, or any topics you would like to hear the directions analysts or our guests cover in one of these podcasts, please do not hesitate to contact me via X or Blue Sky. Directions on Microsoft is on LinkedIn, so make sure you follow us there. And we also, as I said, are on X and Blue Sky. So give us a follow at Directions MSFT on X or Directions on Microsoft on Blue Sky in order to keep up with all of the latest Microsoft Enterprise product and licensing information. Thanks again.